Hello, everybody. How are you doing? I'm in the last hour, so I've been watching part of the What the Bleep. I haven't finished that yet because I watch, you know, just a few segments at a time. So I've been watching What's the Bleep. You know, I watched a few segments in the last hour. So that's where I've been. And, you know, it's kind of still, I don't know how it is for you guys, but after watching What's the Bleep, it kind of stays with me for a little bit. I keep contemplating it and contemplating it. It doesn't end when the video ends. Kathy says she just watched Eckhart. I haven't watched Eckhart yet. I still need to do that. I hope to finish What's the Bleep tomorrow and then watch Eckhart, you know, Tuesday before our meeting. So, but hello, everyone. It's good to see you. Welcome to 7 Steps to Awakening. And we are going to be starting today on quote 758. So we're getting near the end of the Yoga Vasistha quotes for step three. We've been on these quotes for I don't know how long. You know, probably a year. There's a lot of them. I don't know how long. When we go into the Sri Sankara quotes, which we still may not get to for a few weeks, the way I go, but then we'll be in the last couple pages of step three. So we are inching towards the end of step three and moving into step four. But again, since sometimes I only cover one quote a week, it could still be many, many weeks before we get to step four. What I'm going to do is play a song. I played this song early this morning when I opened the sanctuary, but of course, you know, only a few people were there at the time to get to hear it. So I'm going to play it again. This is a song that Michael Langford has put on one of his playlists. The playlist is called Love, Peace, Kindness Songs. And right now he has 22 videos in that YouTube playlist. He sent a couple of them to me just to bring my attention to them because he knew that they were new songs to me. He knew I wasn't aware of these songs, and he was correct, I wasn't. And this song that I'm going to play now, was one of the two. It's called I Choose Love by Sean Galloway.
Strong and I'm strong.
So, as I mentioned, we are going to begin with quote 758. And let me begin by reading that quote. The true self alone is real, devoid of the concepts of time, space, and such other notions. The true self is not a void. This truth is realized only by those who are established in the supreme state, not by those who rest in the ego sense. I'll read that again. The self alone is real, devoid of the concepts of time, space, and such other notions. The self is not a void. This truth is realized only by those who are established in the supreme state, not by those who rest in the ego sense. All right, so let me just read to you from my journal. This was written on September 27th, 2013. True self holds no concepts. It is beyond concepts. It is conceptless. Conceptless. Therefore, that which holds concepts is not true self, although it may be a perfect reflection of self. That which is a perfect reflection of self is not to be judged as less than that which it reflects, nor is it to be confused with that which it reflects. Between the two, there lies clarity. In clarity, one finds harmony. In harmony, one is guided by perfect reflection, intuition. Um, This reminds me of, what's his name? I remember the story, I just don't remember the teacher's name. Oh, Sri Ramakrishna. I leaned back to look at my bookshelf because I knew I had his book on my bookshelf. Sri Ramakrishna. I bet I can't find that story in a blank, but let me see if I can. Because it's a story I haven't read in so many years that I just might forget it if I, I just opened up the book to see where my bookmark was, and it's like a, kind of like a Hershey's wrapper type bookmark. It's really, it is a bookmark, but it's made to look like a Hershey's wrapper. And I just thought I would look and see if I had left a bookmark at the place where the story is I want to tell, but it looks like I didn't. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell the story anyway, even though I'm sure I will mess it up a little bit. So what I'm going to say is this is Regina's version, Regina's version of Sri Ramakrishna's story, which is not going to be near as good. How's that? Not going to be near as good, but we will get the point. Actually, I'm not going to do that. I know where I can search my computer and find this story, so I'm just going to ask you guys to be patient for a second, and I want to find the story because I think it's better to have it be clear. All right, found it. So here we go. Now I can read the story to you. First of all, I just wanted to teach you something in case you don't know this about the Hindu teaching and the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita and Hindu teaching, there's something called the three gunas. And the three gunas are what we could call kind of three states of mind. And, you know, one could be called a lower state of mind, and then the next one is a higher than that, and then the next one is the highest state of mind in the world. And the lowest state of mind is tamasic. And the tamasic state of mind, you know, for example, might have lots of addictions. Might be very, very lazy, may not have many ambitions, could be very dishonest, deceitful, manipulative, selfish, you know, could even abuse others. You know, so that's the tamasic state of mind. The rajasic state of mind, again, is often perceived as higher or better than the tamasic state of mind. And the rajasic state of mind is really the state of mind we see in what in people that we think of as, you know, fairly successful. People who set goals and obtain goals. You know, they're really interested in, you know, they might be interested in, you know, like if it was the 1950s and I was a wife, but I was rajasic, you know, I'd want to be a really good homemaker. You know, I'd be cutting coupons and finding the great recipes and keeping the house really clean. You know, so success can look different to different people, but there's some, we could call it some ambition there. But again, the ambition has a personal motive. You know, I'm really concerned about my own success, my family's success, how other people see me. But it's perceived as a little higher than the tamasic state of mind. And then the highest state of mind is the sattvic state of mind. The sattvic state of mind is the purified state of mind. I think that probably typically people come across the sattvic state of mind by practicing spiritual purification. So the sattvic state of mind is not self-centered. It has a genuine interest in the whole, a genuine concern for the whole. It's detached from the world. It doesn't look for a peaceful outcome. It's very peaceful. It's very trusting. It's kind of a spiritual state of mind, right? So, and again, that would be considered the highest state of mind. So these three states of mind, tamasic, rajasic, or rahasic, I don't know if I'm saying that right. I don't know if the J is pronounced or not. And sattvic. These are the three gunas. So I had to tell you that before I share this to you, before I share this with you. Otherwise, if you didn't know that much, the story wouldn't make any sense. So now that you know that, this is Sri Ramakrishna's story. None of the three gunas can reach truth. They are like robbers who cannot come to a public place for fear of being arrested. Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas are like so many robbers. Listen to a story. Once, a man was going through a forest when three robbers fell upon him and robbed him of all his possessions. One of the robbers said, "What's the use of keeping this man alive?" So saying, he was about to kill him with his sword when the second robber interrupted him, saying, "Oh no, what is the use of killing him? Tie him hand and foot and leave him here." The robbers bound his hands and feet and went away. After a while, the third robber returned and said to the man, "Ah, I am sorry. Are you hurt? I will release you from your bonds." After setting the man free, the thief said, "Come with me. I will take you to the public highway." After a long time, they reached the road. Then the robber said, "Follow this road. Over there is your house." At this, the man said, "Sir, you have been very good to me. Come with me to my house." "Oh, no," the robber replied. "I can't go there. The police will know it." The world itself is the forest. The three robbers prowling here are Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. It is they that rob a man of the knowledge of truth. Tamas wants to destroy him. Rajas binds him to the world. But Sattva rescues him from the clutches of Rajas and Tamas. Under the protection of Sattva, man is rescued from anger, passion, and the other evil effects of Tamas. Further, Sattva loosens the bonds of the world. But Sattva also is a robber. It cannot give him the ultimate knowledge of truth, though it shows him the road leading to the supreme abode of God. Setting him on the path, Sattva tells him, "Look yonder, there is your home." Even Sattva is far away from the knowledge of Brahman. So, what this story is really saying, you know, lots of people would look at the person with the purified state of mind, the sattva state of mind, and say that one is enlightened. And in fact, many times we have done that. You know, many people would refer to Gandhi, for example, assuming he is sattvic. Many people would refer to Gandhi as enlightened, or Mother Teresa, assuming she was sattvic. Many people would refer to Mother Teresa as enlightened. So, you know, we look up to these people because they have all of the purified qualities, and they're great pointers to truth, which is exactly what this story says. Remember, the robber that represented Sattvic came back. You know, the Rajasic guy had tied him up. The Tamasic guy wanted to kill him. The Rajasic guy had tied him up, and the Sattva guy came back and untied him. He untied him. So, you know, for example, a Sattvic spiritual teacher could untie you, loosen you from your bonds, because the pointing that comes through the Sattvic teacher is so clear. It's an absolute reflection of truth. But the Sattvic teacher, in this story, After untying the man who had been robbed, took the man back to the highway, pointed the way home. But when the man said, "You've been so kind to me, come with me," the Sattvic teacher said, "No, no, I can't go there. I might get arrested." So what this says to me is there was still an attachment to the little self, still an attachment to me, and still fear of losing that. So when I read my journal entry today, let me read that journal entry to you again. It says, "True self holds no concepts. It is beyond concepts. It is conceptless. Therefore, that which holds concepts is not true self, although it may be a perfect reflection of self." So to me, this is talking about the sattvic state of mind. And what this is doing is it's giving us a way of determining for ourself, and not that we want to look out at someone else and say, "Oh, they're sattvic," or "they're enlightened," or "they're rajasic," or "they're tamasic." we don't want to do that. But it's giving us a way of looking at ourself and being able to see, yes, there's a lot of purification here. Yes, there's a lot of clarity here. I mean, my God, the clarity that comes through is absolutely amazing, because the mind has been purified enough that the truth can shine through. But concepts are still alive with this mind. You know, there's still the idea of I. There's still some feelings of safe and unsafe, right? Therefore, this is not awakeness. This is a purified state of mind. And it gives us the ability to know the difference between awakeness and the purified state of mind. It gives us that ability to be genuinely honest with ourselves about our state of mind. I know I talked, it was probably last week, about how that temptation arises. And we talked about this actually in the Gentle Healing Group on Tuesday as well, how that temptation arises to say, "I'm done. I'm awake." And, you know, I can hear a lot of teachers speaking. And again, I don't get into the business of saying whether a teacher is enlightened or not, because I don't feel that I could honestly know that. But teachers who have the reputation of being enlightened, I hear a lot of these teachers speak, and they speak about their experience, and their experience often mirrors my experience. But that's because my experience is sattvic now. It's purified. I think I was probably born into a more rajasic type of role in this life. In fact, I was reading some letters recently that my mother sent me that I wrote to her when I was around 20, and I was just laughing. I think I was probably very rajasic. I had all kinds of goals and all kinds of things I wanted to achieve. It's just so funny to look at how many plans I had. And some of them happened, you know, but there were just so many plans. It's funny. But now there's been a lot of purification that has happened, and so the mind is probably more sattvic. But the mind is not beyond concepts. And in fact, if you think about it, the mind can never get beyond concepts. So to think that we're going to take the mind to awakening, I think the best we can do with the mind is take it to purification. Awakening is realizing that we aren't the mind. Right? It's a completely different, I'm going to use the word behavior right now. It's a completely different behavior. Purification is still useful. And in fact, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita recommends purification to Arjuna. And the reason that purification is helpful is because the sattvic mind can point the way home. It can allow that clarity to come through that points the way home. And it can allow the mind not to be so distracted, right? So that one can follow the directions home and make it home without getting distracted and saying, "Oh, let me stop by this candy store, and ooh, let me stop by this movie theater, and ooh, let me, you know, it helps us to go more directly home. So the sattvic mind is helpful. It points the way home. Even, you know, my own sattvic mind helps to point me home. But the act of purifying the mind is not the same thing as the act of awakening. The act of awakening is realizing I am not the mind, realizing what I am. And to be honest, that can happen when the mind is not yet purified. It's just, again, a purified mind, points the direction more clearly and is less easily distracted, therefore it's a benefit. But it's not that purification has to happen. It's not that you have to reach sattvic before you can realize the self. And so, again, looking back at my journal entry, therefore, that which holds concepts is not true self, although it may be a perfect reflection of self. Again, that clarity can come through the sattvic mind. Those perfect pointers can come through the sattvic mind. That which is a perfect reflection of self is not to be judged as less than that which it reflects. In other words, let's have great respect for the sattvic mind. Let's have great respect for the clarity and the wisdom that comes through a purified mind. And let's listen to it as if we're listening to the guidance of God. Right? If we were using the language of A Course in Miracles, you know, basically we'd be saying, listen to the Holy Spirit because it's the voice for God. Right? It gets that same respect. But notice we don't say the Holy Spirit is God. We say the Holy Spirit is the voice for God. And the sattvic mind is the reflection of God. Right? There's really two different ways of saying the same thing. And so it gets the respect of God. And so when the clarity comes through the purified mind and it's not distorted by the ego, we listen to it and trust it and follow it with the same respect of the true self. But it's not the true self because it still has concepts in it. You know, if wisdom comes through you that basically is telling you to be patient, you know, it's giving you some kind of guidance to wait and be patient. Wait and be patient are concepts. So it's not really the true self that is speaking there. It's the wisdom of the purified mind, which is a reflection of the true self or the voice for God. But we give it that same respect. We don't say, oh, you're not God. I'm not listening. We give it the same respect because it points the way home. But the mind itself is what's sattvic, not me, really. Because I am awareness. So the mind, the purified mind, actually begins to point awareness back within. Points awareness away from the world, points awareness back within, so that awareness can go home, but the mind does not go there with it. Right? The mind is too afraid. So, that which is a perfect reflection of self is not to be judged as less than that which it reflects, nor is it to be confused with that which it reflects. Between the two, there lies clarity. In clarity, so when it says between the two, it means not judging on the one side and not confusing the purified mind with the true self on the other side, right? Not doing either of those two mistakes. Between the two, respecting the purified mind, valuing it as a perfect reflection of self, but not confusing it with the true self, with enlightenment, right? That's where our clarity is. We then recognize that what this is doing is pointing home. But it's our job to follow the pointers, us being awareness. It's our job to follow the pointers. And what that means, in effect, that we have to leave the pointing mind behind. Because again, it's not going to come with us. So we have to leave the pointing mind behind. Now in NTI, 1 Corinthians, where it talks about becoming the empty shell, there is one particular sentence that kind of scared me when I wrote it. Because again, my mind was not purified then. Basically, it's talking about becoming the empty shell, letting go of all concepts, letting go of all thoughts, right? Letting go of all beliefs. And then there's a sentence that I can't quote exactly, but the gist of the sentence is to leave behind even the Holy Spirit's thoughts. And when I wrote that, that scared me. You know, but the Holy Spirit is truth. If I leave behind the Holy Spirit's thoughts, I'm in trouble, right? Because the Holy Spirit is truth. And what this journal entry is saying, no, 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 don't confuse the Holy Spirit with truth. Don't confuse those thoughts that point home with home. You have to leave those behind too. You have to leave the purified mind behind too. You have to leave the right mind behind too. You have to go beyond all concepts. Because the true self is beyond all concepts. So again, the journal entry says, that which is a perfect reflection of self is not to be judged as less than that which it reflects, nor is it to be confused with that which it reflects. Between the two, between judgment and confusion, there lies clarity. In clarity, one finds harmony. In harmony, one is guided by perfect reflection intuition. See, we can be guided by perfect reflection intuition if we obey it, follow it, but not confuse it with truth. It's just the pointer. And again, that pointer can appear to come from an external teacher or an external book, right? Those purified thoughts get written down in books. But it can also come from within me. So it's like the song we were listening to in the Gentle Healing Group a couple of weeks ago. You know, the song that ended with, I'm listening. I'm listening. I'm listening. We want to listen to that purified mind. Go in the direction it points. But be willing to leave it behind. So let me go back and look at the original quote. This was quote 758. The self alone is real, devoid of the concepts of time, space, and such other notions. The self is not a void. The truth is realized only by those who are established in the supreme state, not by those who rest in the ego's sense. And I do have another journal entry for 758, so why don't we go and look at that, 758B. And by the way, I don't think I gave you guys the link. I don't know that you always read along with me, but I do typically give you the link. So let me give it to you now just in case anybody's here wanting to read along. There's the link. So the journal entry for 758B is a little long. This is it. Look at the self as it is known now. This is the true self. Look at the true self as it is known now. When it is realized that senses are not the self, thoughts are not the self, and sensations are not the self, what is the self? Stay with that. As you stay with that, is it empty or full? Is it personal or impersonal? Is it moving or still? Notice how no definition suits it. At best, it can be said to be. It is. Beyond that, there is no truth that can be spoken of it. Empty may be a useful description of the true self when compared to the mind, which is full. But if it is not compared to the mind, empty is as meaningless as full. Impersonal may be a useful description of self when compared to the belief in a personal self. But if it is not compared to this belief, impersonal is as untrue as personal. Still may be a useful description of self when compared to the movement of mind, body, and world. But if it is not compared to these, still is a concept just as movement is a concept. Ideas of self are not the self. The self is known only through direct experience. I think that journal entry speaks for itself. I don't know that there's anything of value to add. I think that what I will do is just focus on the last sentence of the journal entry a little more. Ideas of self are not the self. The self is known only through direct experience. This is probably important for us to hold on to because, again, the mind wants to tell us that conceptually we can know the true self. In fact, I only saw a paragraph of what this young man wrote, so it's a little bit taken out of context. But I had a friend send me a paragraph from a very young teacher the other day asking me what I thought of it. And one of the things that was in this paragraph was he said that awareness is just a concept. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing to read because, you know, most teachers nowadays are saying you are awareness. Awareness is your truth. Awareness is what you are. And now we have this young teacher saying awareness is just a concept. She wanted to know what I thought of that. And of course, that's true. Of course. Awareness is a word. And none of us know for sure if what that word means to me is the same as what that word means to you. At that level, it's a concept. And so it's important for us to realize that the truth is not a concept. Because if I have a mental understanding of awareness and a mental understanding of stillness, a mental understanding of empty, I may put those mental understandings together and say, I know truth, and not even notice that I'm only at the conceptual level. I'm only at the level of understanding words the way I understand those words. So what this journal entry is really doing is pointing to that tendency of the ego to understand concepts and put concepts together and then say it understands truth. So again, what this journal entry is saying is, you know, for example, we may hear teachers describe awareness as empty. And empty can be a useful pointer. Remember we said the sattvic mind points, the clear mind points, but it's the clear mind that's using the word. It's the clear mind that's using the word empty, because empty is a concept. But that concept is a useful pointer. You know, if you close your eyes and I see your question, Meg. I'll get to it in a little bit. If you close your eyes and you're about to meditate, and you remember that a teacher told you that what you're looking for is empty, and you close your eyes, and the mind starts chattering, and at first you start going off with the mind, listening to the mind, chattering about what you got to do today after you get done meditating, you can immediately recognize that's not empty. All right, you can immediately recognize that. And so that description of empty helps you. You start looking for something that feels more empty than the mind. And if you're following that pointer, looking for something that feels more empty to the mind, you can find that, which right now I'm just going to call non-mind. Non-mind isness. I'll call it that. Non-mind isness. You can find non-mind isness. But once you find non-mind isness, the word empty doesn't really have a meaning anymore. Because it itself is not truly emptiness or fullness. It's beyond these ideas that are only in the mind. Now Meg is asking, is awareness sattva? And I guess I have to say no. And it's kind of funny, you know, it's kind of funny because if anybody wants to be confused with what I'm about to say, the opportunity for confusion is there. Awareness itself is just a concept. Like I said, we don't know for sure. You know, like one friend one time, let me give you a specific example. One friend one time, we were discussing awareness. It was actually in a MPP class. And awareness was the topic at the time. And one of the participants in the class said, you know, when I close my eyes to meditate, my heart just, you know, it feels open. It feels really, really open. Is that awareness? You know, that feeling of my heart being open? And I said, no, awareness is that which is aware of that. But you see how awareness can be a concept. Ooh, maybe awareness is that opening I feel in my heart. Or another time I was talking to another person in another, you know, kind of workshop setting, and she said, is awareness that ringing in my ears? You know, I think that's it. I think she said, it's that ringing in my ears that I only hear when I get still. I said, no. Awareness is what's aware of the ringing in the ears. So you see, awareness itself is just a concept. And that concept can help point until people find it, what it's pointing to. And because people can understand the concept differently, you know, they may, you know, come to the wrong conclusion temporarily. If you have the intention to come to the right conclusion, if you have the intention to find what the word awareness points to, you will find it. But you can come to the wrong conclusion for a while. In fact, let me tell you about a wrong conclusion that I came to, I think for around 6 months. When I closed my eyes and I became still, and was trying to focus on awareness. That was my intention, is what I mean by trying. I was trying to focus on awareness. I found something that I thought was awareness. And I learned to focus on it. And I focused on it for about 6 months. And then one day, I realized that something was looking at it. Something was focusing on it. And that something was awareness, not what I had found first. And what I had found first that I thought was awareness is now what I will call sensations in the head. You know, maybe it was brain activity, because, you know, the brain fires, you know, and stuff's always happening in your body, and the brain's the motherboard. It's managing it. So I imagine that it creates some sensations. And when we're really, really still, we notice those sensations. When we're, you know, moving about in the world, we don't notice them. They're kind of blind to us. But when you get really, really still and you're looking for awareness, you find these sensations, and they have an alive feel to them. It's a very alive activity kind of thing. So, and it's very subtle. So I was focusing on that, looking on that, thinking, that's awareness, that's awareness. I'm watching awareness. And then one day, just bam, out of the blue, it hit me. Wait a minute, what's watching this? And I turned my looking back even more. But you see, the word awareness is a pointer. And yes, the word awareness as a pointer would come from the purified mind. You know, the unpurified mind would not be able to be that subtle in its instructions. You know, the unpurified mind is still has concepts maybe of God as outside of me and that kind of thing. So the unpurified mind would never give such a clear instruction. And that is a clear instruction. To look for awareness, awareness watching awareness. Those are clear instructions. But they're still at the conceptual level, and you have to discover for yourself through your own direct experience what those concepts are pointing to, those clear concepts. So the concepts deserve respect, but the concepts are not truth. They're pointers. Let me read this journal entry again. First of all, the first sentence says, look at the self as it is known now. That's an interesting first sentence to the journal entry. Look at the self as it is known now. In other words, whatever you and I right now may look at, be aware of as our truest nature, may well not yet be that. You know, for example, if we compare the truest nature, our ultimate nature, to the ocean, we might be looking at a mountain stream. It's still water, like the ocean is water. So in a way, we're heading in the right direction. If we follow that mountain stream, it's going to run into a river. And if we follow that river, it's going to run into a bigger river. And eventually, that bigger river is going to run into the ocean. So we're on the right track. But what we might, you know, be looking at is a mountain stream. It's not really the ocean of the self. But what this journal entry says, look at the self as it is known now. So even if a mountain stream is all that you are currently aware of, look at that. It's still water. It's going to have the right qualities. So look at the self. To whatever degree you have awareness of it, even if it's not full awareness, right? Look at the self as it is known now, whatever that is. When it is realized that the senses are not the self, thoughts are not the self, and sensations, like the one in my head, are not the self, the ringing in my ears, not the self. The feeling of the open heart, not the self, right? The sensations, the thoughts, the senses, none of them are the self. What is realized? What is realized? What is the self? Look at the self as it is known now. When it is realized that the senses are not the self, the thoughts are not the self, and sensations are not the self. What is the self? What can you find that's right here, right now, that's none of those things? Don't name it, but stay with it. Stay with that. And as you stay with that, is it empty or full? Is it personal or impersonal? Is it moving or still? Notice how no definition suits it. At best, it can be said to be. It is. Beyond that, there is no truth that can be spoken of it. Empty may be a useful description of self when compared to the mind, which is full. But if it is not compared to the mind, empty is as meaningless as full. Impersonal may be a useful description of self when compared to the belief in a personal self. But if it is not compared to this belief, impersonal is as untrue as personal. Still may be a useful description of self when compared to the movement of mind, body, and world. But if it is not compared to these, still is a concept, just as movement is a concept. Ideas of self are not the self. The self is known only through direct experience. So again, that's asking us to follow the pointers without believing the pointers, without making them the truth itself, right? Let's see, Jay said, I wonder if that is what is meant by drink from the living waters, to partake of direct experience and rise above concepts. What do you think, Regina? I think that sounds perfect, Jay. Yeah, I think that sounds perfect. And that's what I have in the journal for 758. Again, quote 758 is, the self alone is real, devoid of the concepts of time, space, and such other notions. The self is not a void. This truth is realized only by those who are established in the supreme state, not by those who rest in the ego sense. You know, so again, the concepts that the ego has, that's not it. You can't know it that way. You have to follow the clear pointers and have the direct experience. So we have another quote that we can look at, quote 759. Quote 759 says, you ready for this? Take off your sensitivities, your too sensitiveness. Human beings are narrow-minded and petty-minded, interested in the trivia of life. They spend most of their time in pursuit of evil desires. There you go. So if you want to be offended, you could probably use that quote for that purpose, if that's your choice. So let's listen to the quote again, and then let's look at it with the right mind, the sattvic mind, the mind that would not be offended, right? Quote number 759. Human beings are narrow-minded and petty-minded, interested in the trivia of life. They spend most of their time in pursuit of evil desires. There we go. So let me read my journal entry for 759. The confused mind is confused. And when belief is given to it, action is confused. It could also be said that the ignorant mind is ignorant, and when belief is given to it, action is ignorant. Wise action is the spontaneous result of not believing in confusion or ignorance. Well, I'll tell you something. It makes me a little sad. So, you know, this mind is not perfectly healed, I guess. I'm a little sad. But maybe it's natural to be sad about things like what I'm about to tell you. There's a story in the news the last couple of days. This actually happened several years ago, but just now a prisoner confessed to it, so now they have more information about what may have happened. A 17-year-old girl was kidnapped from a hotel in Myrtle Beach. And her kidnapper, we don't know what happened from between the time he kidnapped her and the time he took her to this drug house, but eventually he took her to this drug house and was kind of bragging about the fact that he had kidnapped her. And what happened in this drug house, I don't know how long she was there, but she was repeatedly gang raped. And then, as the story says, she was pistol whipped, beaten with a gun. And then she was shot. And then her body was fed to alligators. And as I was reading that story, or after I read that story, as it was kind of lingering in my mind, this image came into my mind. And of course, you know, I don't know that this is true at this in the story of this girl. But an image came into my mind of one of the gentlemen at the drug house when it was his turn to rape her, you know, went into the room wherever she was and was taken by her beauty because she was quite beautiful and had some pity for her and mistaked his emotions for love. And he told her that he loved her and he kissed her and he told her he was sorry for what the others were doing to her. And then, of course, he went on to have sex with her himself, thinking that he was doing it innocently, when actually it was just another man in a long string of men in a gang rape. But this shows how our minds can deceive us. You see, this man, which again, I don't know that such a man existed. It was interesting how this came flooding into my mind, but this man thought that what he was doing was different than what all of the others were doing. And this man is no different than all of us. You know, Kathy's using the coarse language, the face of innocence. You know, we can justify when we get angry. We can justify when we get rude. We can justify when we lie. We can justify when we steal, if we steal. We can justify getting drunk, if we get drunk. We can justify disavowing our children. What's it called when you kick your children out of your family and say, I'm never going to talk to you again? We can, you know, justify hating our husband. We can justify cheating on our wife. We can justify all of that with that same face of innocence. And yet we are still participating in the evil. And what this quote is trying to do is wake us up to that. Now, in my journal entry, because the word evil can be so charged, I use some different words, but they're no different. Listen to these words. The confused mind is confused. And when belief is given to it, action is confused. It could also be said that the ignorant mind is ignorant. And when belief is given to it, action is ignorant. Wise action is the spontaneous result of not believing confusion or ignorance. Wise action is the spontaneous result of not believing confusion or ignorance. So I would say that leaves each of us with a challenge. The challenge is to let go of believing our own confused, ignorant mind. Because if we believe our confused, ignorant mind, our actions will be confused and ignorant. And with that, my time is up. Thank you very much. I love you all. Bye.